There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I'd like to talk to you about thequantedge.com. Great daily fantasy sports website. They kicked it off with football this year, crushing it with NBA. They got the playoffs blowing and going still. And the MLB package is churning out green screen after green screen. I have the pleasure of writing part of the batter breakdown 5 to 7 times a week over there. Tons of great articles, great member Discord chat, and awesome, awesome tools. More and more coming down the pipeline. The advanced stat tool is going to be expanded soon. Currently is free for everyone that wants to go check it out. So go get that. But they have the lineup optimizer, weather, umpire, injury, so many other things to go check out at thequantedge.com. So I highly recommend it. And if you want to get the rest of the MLB season package, you can do that for $124.99. If you like to just try all sports for the first month, go get it at $19.99. You could also get a 5-day trial for $5.99. So go to thequantedge.com, promo code Bubba for all those good, good things. Also, if you give a rating and review on iTunes, I'd much appreciate it. It would help more and more people get to find and listen to Bench with Bubba, as the more ratings and review they have, the higher up the rankings of the podcast world you can go. With all that being said, welcome to Bench with Bubba, episode 166, with our good buddy Sammy Reed, talking fantasy baseball week 5, Fab, and Game of Thrones, episode 3 of season 8. Everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 166. Have a reoccurring guest, a friend of the podcast, a member of the Barf League. He does podcasting at the moment for Roto Grinders and does a lot of the great, you know, winning award type writing for football for Roto Grinders. You can find him on Twitter at Sammy Reed FI. My friend Sammy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. And if this is episode 166, and I think this is my second time, that means, yep, I've been on like 1.2% of all Bench with Bubba episodes, and that's really an honor and a privilege.
There you go. And it is an honor and a privilege to have you for 1.2% of them. It's awesome. I've got to know Sammy through Barf League and other deals. One of the really, really good, genuine dudes out there. So I always like chatting it up with Sammy. If we can push record once in a while, it's fun because, you know, when he can do math that quickly, you know, he's super knowledgeable when it comes to everything else. So, Before we get started,
I may or may not have just used the calculator app on my phone. I'm going to just go ahead and say I did it in my head, just to impress everybody.
Yes, yeah, there's no need to give away the secret. A good magician never tells, like, ever.
Secret sauce.
Yeah, secret sauce. Before we get rocking and rolling on this week's fantasy baseball action, why don't you let everybody know what you got going on or what you got cooking in the pipeline?
Yeah, I mean, mostly a bunch of podcasting for Roto Grinders on the On Deck daily podcast for them, and we just do DFS there. You know, Doug Thorburn, another honorary guest member, mm-hmm, of the Barf League, him and I do a podcast called Baseball Holics Anonymous, and We haven't done one in a while because just life stuff. And so we're actually like revamping the kind of the structure of the pod to make it viable. So that should be starting up again soon. I'm pretty excited to do that.
Yeah, we're all pumped for that. That's one of the better ones out there. And yes, life gets in the way. We know Doug's been, you know, starting businesses and doing all kinds of stuff. So yep. He's busy, you're busy. I totally get it. Life happens and it gets pretty crazy. We can't all be Justin Mason and do this 24. We can do this 27/7. But yeah, we'll look forward to that. Can't wait to see what the new format is. And you know, you got your super fan Yancey Eaton that'll hop on at any time. So you're good there.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll make Yancey happy because we'll start right out the gate. Nate Lowe, he gets the call to the Tampa Bay Rays today. Like it was, you kind of knew it was coming, but I didn't think it was actually going to happen today because I'm really mad at myself. Literally, I stared at him in TGFBI yesterday. I was like, I should put a cheap bid on him, but I really need physical players like put on my roster right now. And I couldn't do it. And then he gets called up like 12 hours after Fab closes. So that was outstanding. What's your take on Nate Lowe? Because he was crushing in the minors, crushed it last year. He picked up a double today and scored a run. Looks like they're going to play him every day. So what's your take on Nate Lowe?
My take is that I think it would have been way smarter to get him for a buck this week than it will be for like $150 this coming week. But I wasn't smart enough to do that. So here we are, Bubba, you and me.
Yes.
Going to pay out the wazoo for this kid. And frankly, I think he'll be worth it. I mean, I love the profile of Lowe. He's one of those guys that just has a lot of power and a lot of patience, right? Like he had a 12.8% walk rate last year. You mentioned the big year he had the minors over three levels, 330 average, 416 on base, 568 triple slash for the slugging. I mean, that's monstrous. And if he's going to play every day, I mean, that lineup in Tampa is really, really good. Like, I think this guy could be one of the best pickups of the year. And I think people who paid out for players this week will probably be pretty bummed that they didn't save some cash for Lowe this coming week here.
Yeah, that's kind of my saving grace is I haven't gotten the Chavises, the Keybooms, the Tuckers, any of these young kids that have been coming up and everyone's kind of been blowing their wad on them. I've been trying to be smart yet keep them honest bid, and yeah, it hasn't come close. So, and when we talk about Fab like we do every Monday, it is always fun to kind of see the different ranges and prices for some of these guys because it's crazy from league to league. But you mentioned how low you're thinking, Nick. 125, 130. I know you're just kind of joking around there because it could be totally different come Sunday. It feels like it's like three jacks this week or something. But
oh, yeah. I mean, he could easily go for 250 in leagues. I mean, it's crazy how different bidding is in different leagues depending on setups and just the personalities that are in there. But I think Lowe will go for a lot of money, and I think he should. Like, you just mentioned some of the guys that went this last week, Tucker, Chavis. Keyboom. I think Lowe, if I were going to rank them, I think I probably like Lowe better than all of them.
Yeah. Okay. That's where I was going to go with that is with all the ones that have been coming up. It's like every week it's okay. Tucker's cool. Big prospect, not super excited, but people were excited for certain reasons. Then Chavis comes up and then Keyboom came. I was like, okay, this is the guy, but you know, you never really know if these guys are going to stick. You said it when you talking about Lowe, this guy should stick unless for some reason the hit tool does not work. This guy should be up there every day, and I'm with you. This guy literally from this point on, 20 homers isn't out of the realm. Like that's a legit possibility with him. And, you know, if he gets 280 even, it would be great, but he showed 300-plus ability in the minors. So it'll be really interesting to see where it goes. I know I'll be bidding on him. Which league are you in again?
So we are together in BARF. I'm in the NFBC main event, and then obviously TGFBI. So those are going to be my big Fab leagues. Yes. And TGFBI, I'm so like League 8, I think.
League 8, yes, okay. Yeah, I think you're with that's a different league. But yeah, okay. But that'll be interesting to see how it goes. We don't have to remember. But Nate Lowe, he is up. It is happening, and I'm kicking myself. So we'll see how that changes on Sunday. Somebody that should have kicked himself instead of hit a door would be Alex Reyes. At least he was smart if he used his left hand, not his right hand. He's going to be out for a little while, and, you know, I have experienced it with Hunter Strickland. Now we have Drew Pomeranz on the Giants. Maybe it's just a thing we do. Bring Alex Reyes over. I'll take the gamble. Any concerns or thoughts on Alex Reyes with this whole deal?
Yeah, I have a lot of concerns about Reyes. Number one, that he's an idiot, and number two, that there is no such thing as a pitching prospect. And Yes. I mean, Reyes was as good of a pitching prospect as we've seen in a couple years, and he's thrown like 40 professional innings since 2017. You know, and now he's, you know, without a role, he's with a broken hand. I mean, obviously in dynasty leagues, you're hanging on to him and keepers and stuff like that. But like in redraft leagues, even a 15 teamer, I don't know if you should have room for this guy on your roster. It's just innings, and he's not doing that.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern. I just don't think he's worth it anymore. It's like, would you rather, like, I guess I already know the answer, but would you rather roll the dice on a Carlos Martinez out of the bullpen instead of Alex Reyes?
Well, yeah, because Carlos Martinez out of the bullpen is major league innings. I mean, that's just the reality. Like, at some point, we're a month into the season now, and at some point in the preseason, you're drafting guys based on, okay, I think this guy can contribute at some point in this and that. But then reality hits, and your guys start getting hurt, and your closers start losing jobs, and it's like, shit, dude, like, I got to do something with my roster. I need guys who are going to produce. And Reyes is just not that guy right now, and he won't be in the near future, it looks like. So, adios, amigo.
Yeah, pretty crazy that everyone was pumped on him coming into the season, and it just went away so, so fast. Another guy we were all pumped on, Eloy Jimenez. This one sucks. Trying to rob a home run, hurts his ankle. It sounds pretty bad because they're not going to let him really do anything for like 2 weeks. Then they're going to reevaluate things. This could be like a 4 to 6 week deal because you don't want to rush this back by any means. He kind of got off to a slow start this year. How are you kind of, you're not dropping Eloy Jimenez, but what's your thoughts on him right now with this whole ankle deal?
So my thoughts are, you remember last year when Acuna came up and he did, you know, okay, pretty good. And then he had that Bryce Harper injury over at first where he like tripped on the base and hyperextended his knee. Mm-hmm. And he was out for a while, and it's just like, oh, this guy we were so excited about, like, wasn't that great, and then he got hurt. Like, is this guy going to be anybody? And then Acuna came back and just absolutely mauled the second half of the season. I can see that for Eloy Jimenez. And it sucks that he's going to be out a couple of weeks. Absolutely, if you have him on your team, that sucks. NFBC leagues, you have to just kick it on your bench. In a lot of other leagues, you have a DL spot you can use, I'm sure. But if I'm in a league that has DL spots and stuff like that, I might make an offer for Eloy and try to buy low. I just think that Acuna-esque potential is there with him. And, you know, he's had, I don't know how many at-bats, I don't have it in front of me, but like 50 at-bats, 60 at-bats. Like, I mean, we have no idea what this kid is capable of. And it's probably big things. So if their owner is bummed, and it's really tough to buy low in a lot of cases, but when a guy gets hurt and he's going to be out for multiple weeks, that's a situation where you actually can buy low. So I would look into that in the leagues you don't own him.
I think that's a great take. This guy's a pure two, you know, growing pains, you could say, was kind of the slow start. Still hit 240 with 3 homers, and peripheral stats showed some plus signs there. He's going to figure it out. Like you said with Acuna, he got hurt and he came back and started crushing again. I still think Eloy could do a ton of damage this year. So I think that's a really, really interesting take there about trying to go acquire him, because everyone's, you know, injuries are affecting everybody. So maybe this person doesn't have the room to stash him, or is frustrated and needs some help. So you could definitely, you know, sweeten the deal for him and stash him away if you can afford it. So I like that quite a bit. Let's go to your San Diego Padres real quick. Don't read the outline because I can't type properly.
Dude, hey, let's go to the Padres. I'll talk Padres the rest of the pod if you want to.
Well, I actually have a couple questions on them, so we're going to have some fun with this in a minute. But first off, Luis Urias. Like, everyone thought that Tatis wasn't going to join the club this year because Urias is going to play short, yada, yada, yada. We saw how well that worked out. But now Urias is down in AAA smoking hot. 7 dongs, hitting .391. He's doing everything you can think of to get back in the bigs. What are we thinking here? Like, Ian Kinsler's got to go, right? Like, when do we think we see Urias up here? Like, when can we put the $5 bid in and not get screwed like Nate Lowe?
You know, I think it really depends on the health of Tatis Jr. You know, he got hurt the other day, and I don't think they're quite sure how bad it is. But I think that if he ends up going on the IL, Urias would be a natural fit to come up, because that's what was supposed to happen at the beginning of the season, is he was going to play shortstop until Tatis Jr. was ready. And then they ended up flipping that. But I think that he can play shortstop in a pinch. And I mean, frankly, I think he's worth a small bid if we do not get news on that by next weekend, which we probably will. But if Tatis is okay, I mean, we've been aggressive. I would say within a couple of weeks if he keeps this up. So I think he's knocking on the door. But I think it's reasonable to keep like your expectations in check for him. You know, I don't think he's a guy that profiles with a ton of power or a ton of speed, maybe a low double digit of each guy. And obviously he's smoking hot in the minors, but just like guys in the majors, we don't want to like overrate that and think, okay, this is a fantasy superstar. I don't think that's particularly his profile.
Okay. So yeah, I think he'll be a popular name here soon. So we'll be interested to see how that one pans out. A popular name that I can never pronounce correctly, and I want to get the Padres' take on it. How do I say Nick Margivicus?
Margivicious.
I've said that one before. I said it about 25 different ways now. So Margivicus.
You just keep going, you'll get one right. I mean, honestly, that's the way I say it. I've heard it a couple times, but there's a non-zero chance that in a couple of weeks he says that's not how it's pronounced at all.
And he had a decent start today in Atlanta. You know, they lost 3-1, but he really pitched pretty well against a pretty powerful offense there. What's kind of your guys' thoughts on how he's been this year? Because he kind of came out of nowhere to non-Padre fans, and he's sticking in the rotation. He's putting quality starts out there. Like, what's his fantasy viability to you guys?
You know, I think he's kind of just a solid mid-level guy. I think he's – people really like Joey Lucchese, and I think Lucchese had quite a bit of – strikeout upside, and he still does. Margivicius is not a guy who you look at and think he's a big strikeout guy, but if you look at what he did in the minor leagues last year, I'm always impressed by guys that control the strike zone. And Margivicius last year had an 8.6-1 strikeout to walk ratio. That's really impressive. And obviously, like some of his other numbers, his ERA and his WHIP didn't like totally stand out, but they were solid. But somebody who controls the strike zone like that, I think always has a lot of viability when they get to the majors, and particularly when they pitch in a park like Petco, which he's just really good at neutralizing lefties because he is a lefty and he plays in a lefty neutralizing park. And so I think he gets a lot of extra equity from there. And I think he's going to be fantasy viable the rest of the way. I think he's a really solid pitcher.
I like it. We know Chris Paddock is an electric factory. I haven't seen anything official. We'd imagine they're going to monitor things. Have you heard anything on potentially how many innings he's looking at this year?
Margivicius or Paddock?
Paddock.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really heard their number, but the thing that I do like is the Padres are generally aggressive. And if we are, I say we, because, you know, I'm a Padres fan. If we're in the hunt, yeah, it's you know, it's like stupid, but I can't help but do it. I feel like they will try to keep his innings, you know, 150-ish. But the reality is, dude, you got a Leroy Jenkins if you're in the hunt late in the season, and I hope they do. I'm still like tilted that the Nationals shut down Strasburg all those years ago in the playoffs and still haven't won a championship since. Those windows, I'm not saying the Padres will have one this year. I don't know if we're quite that good, but if we do, I hope that they just let Paddock go, man. Like, that's why you play the game.
Yeah, you don't have the chance to win 3 in 5 years very often, so you should probably go for it while you can. The Manny Machado, this I'm not concerned because it's Manny Machado, but, you know, some people did say he's a free agent that his home road splits were, you know, they stood out, but I still said he's a great pure hitter, and I wasn't overly concerned with it. Are you seeing anything that, you know, keeps the optimism with Machado, or is there maybe something that, you know, as a guy that like you that kind of watches him more often, that you're seeing that maybe there is an issue in the swing or in his approach at the plate right now?
No, nothing really that I'm seeing that stands out. I think he's just kind of going through a cold stretch, and I'm kind of with you that Machado is going to be fine. You know, it's been talked about a lot that Petco for right-handed hitters plays pretty neutral, so it shouldn't be a ballpark issue. And Machado's a young stud. He's, you know, what, 26 years old? Like, I think he's totally fine. Players will have ups and downs throughout the season. I just think he's kind of starting out with a down. And, like, as a baseball fan, it's tilting because it's like, oh, Machado's up. Why does he keep screwing up? Like, just win some games for us. But the reality is that it's a long season, and Machado's going to be fine. So,
yeah.
I in fantasy wise, like I would say buy low, but I doubt anybody who drafted him in the second round is like, oh yeah, let me give you a deal on Machado. Like, probably not going to happen.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That'd be pretty surprising if they did. Last Padres question I have for you for now, at least. And no, I'm not going to ask for Nerick Hosmer questions. I like you. Hunter Renfroe and Franmil Reyes were two guys I was really pumped on coming to the season. Franmil started to pick it up. His X stats are just, they're showing a potential boom coming here sooner than later. And Renfroe's been pretty good. Are those, do you think those guys, their playing time's pretty secure the rest of the way? Because there is quite a bit of activity in that outfield.
Yeah, I think Fran Mills is the most assured out of the two of them. And I think just because they started him off as the starter and he's kind of been there all season, Renfro's been a little in and out as his production has gone up and down. But, I mean, Fran Mill is also a guy, like, I just really believe in his power. You know, like, you look at what he did in the minors. You talked about his X stats this year. I mean, the guy just has monstrous, monstrous pop. People have been a little slow to come around just because he wasn't a supreme prospect, but the guy has legit power. And I mean, I would not be surprised to see him have like a Chris Davis with a K type career at the high end. So I think he's got that kind of upside.
That'd be pretty solid. Okay, non-fantasy question. What year or how soon do we see Tampa Bay versus San Diego in the World Series? Because I think it's a legit possibility. I'm not even just placating two of my buddies here. I like both these teams. I think there's a chance, the way your teams are built, that it could happen sooner than later.
Yeah, I mean, I legit think that, I mean, honestly, the Rays could make a run at that this year. That's a good team. I don't think
really good team.
So good, bro. So good. Yeah. I mean, it's like crazy. It's just like everything they touch turns to gold. They have the 2019 Cy Young Award winner, Blake Snell. Or the 18 winner, Blake Snell, and then the 19 winner, Tyler Glass, now on their team. Like, that's fantastic. I think that the Padres are probably still a year away. I think we'll be really good next year. This year is a little more of a stepping stone, but I think 2020 is a legit possibility. And if everything goes well, you know, keeping the fingers crossed. But as a San Diego fan, I mean, we've never won squat in any sport ever. So just to have hope and optimism, I mean, is something really new and really fun. And first time in, you know, whatever, 20 years, it's been fun to be a Padres fan.
No, I love it. I'm truly pulling for, like, I've pulled for the Rays the last few years because they're just fun and good team to watch. And I'll pull for the Padres because any chance to keep the Dodgers out of it, I am a fan of. So you have.
Yeah, and the truth is we haven't been good enough for, like, anyone in the division to hate us. You know, it's like you haven't developed that hatred for the Padres.
Exactly. The Rockies annoy me, but I can like the Padres. All right, let's go back to some other action. The Padres, they fascinate me. They really, truly do. So I could talk about them for a while. But let's go Chris Archer. Pittsburgh Pirates goes on the 10-day IL with a right thumb inflammation. They're not thinking it's too severe, but, you know, he still isn't Chris Archer of his heyday. What's your just thoughts on Chris Archer in general? Because I assume he'll come back and he'll be okay, but were you a Chris Archer buyer coming into the year, or would you try to be picking him up on the low now? What do you think about Chris Archer?
You know, I was a Chris Archer buyer coming into the year, and not like a buyer like I have him on every team, but more a buyer in the sense that Chris Archer is who he always has been. Like, he's disappointing in the sense that he's a guy who struck out 230 guys for like three straight years, and you're like, dude, if he just develops a third pitch or like nails down his control a little better, like, this guy's a Cy Young candidate. And he never took that step. He never developed a good third pitch. He never got any better. But he didn't really get worse. Like, his ERA fluctuated, but the reality is Archer is Archer. And he's a guy, if he pitches the whole season, he's going to strike out 200 guys. And moving from the AL East to Pittsburgh in the National League, in a park that's really good for pitching, not that Tropicana isn't, but I just thought with the park shift, like, there was value in where he was going. Nothing's changed with Archer so much as just his draft cost changed. And so that made me a little bit of a buyer. I have a couple shares, but, you know, at the end, I think he's just the guy he's always been. And if you like a 4 ERA and 200 strikeouts, Archer's your dude.
Yep, that sums it up beautifully. A guy that I can relate to is Williams Astudillo, Big Brothers Unite. But he hit the IL. This guy is a freak at the plate. For a guy his size, to not strike out and just do what he does is damn right impressive. But he hits the DL with a left hamstring tightness. I didn't think he could feel his muscles personally, but he's going to be out there for Dio, or are you thinking, you know, the other shoe is going to drop sooner than later on this guy? He's 27 years old, finally getting it.
Yeah, I'm an Astudillo fan. I think that he's just so uncommon, right?
Yep.
He's the type of dude who just like, he's this like fat dude who rolls into the bar and schools everybody at shuffleboard and then schools everybody at darts and then schools everybody at pool. Like, he is a savant, and he doesn't look like a savant, but he is. And it sucks that he got hurt because the Twins were really making a lot of playing time for him. He's played six different positions this year. He played in 16 of the Twins' last 23 games, hitting .327. Like, there's a strong case that he was a top five catcher rest of season. So yep. I think he has that sort of talent. I think that he is so good with the bat that he will force himself into that lineup, and hopefully he gets back soon. I'm a big fan. I hope the injury's not too bad.
Yeah, I love Williams Astudillo. It's Bartolo Colon Jr. It's big. I call him Little Sexy. There's a lot to like there with Astudillo, so I hope he comes back sooner than later. Another guy coming back from the IL here shortly is Matt Olson, who suffered that hamate injury in the Japanese series. Starting rehab tomorrow, I believe. He'll rehab for about a week or so with Vegas, and then he should be back with the Oakland A's. Now, we know that the hamate injury can, you know, like, take away some power for a while. What are your expectations for Matt Olson when he comes back with the A's?
Yeah, so I've always been a fan of Olson because he's like that cheap power. He's kind of like a Joey Gallo light type of player, where he's got a bad average, but I had him projected for like 32, 33 homers before this season, and that'll play. I do have concerns about the hamate injury. You know, we've seen guys in the past come back and their power's not the same, or it takes a while to get back into that. So if you take away the supreme power from Olson and just make it good power and he still has a bad average, that's like not that great. That's like a souped up Kendrys Morales, which makes nobody excited. So hopefully that's not the case, but I do have concerns about him.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm worried about. I held on to him. I was shocked when people dropped him earlier this year. That didn't make any sense to me at all. But here we are, and I'll be putting him back in because injuries suck. But the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim promoted one of their pitching prospects, Griffin Canning. People are really, really pumped on him. I know Matt Medica, who knows pitching quite well, very excited about him. He's been good in his last couple seasons in the minors. I honestly didn't know a ton about him until I started researching him earlier today. Do you have any hot takes on Griffin Canning and his viability as a fantasy player?
You know, I don't, because like you, I didn't know who Griffin Canning was 10 days ago. Yeah. I have no problem admitting that.
I like to say I know prospects a little bit too, but I had no idea who this guy was.
Yeah, but like you said, you look back at his minor league record and, you know, really it's just 2018 and then this past year. But his 2018, it was really good. You know, he struck out 9.9 guys per nine innings, had a nice walk to strikeout ratio of almost 3. And then I just rely on the quote unquote scouts to tell me that the guy, you know, sits in the low to mid 90s and can touch 95, 96. And, you know, just based on those reports and the minor league statistical profile, he looks pretty good, and I'm more than willing to take a chance on him. So I've picked him up in a couple leagues where I could get him cheaply, and I'm hoping for good things. But I also thought Eric Swanson would be good, and
yes,
he has not been. So you never quite know with these guys, but I am cautiously optimistic on Canning.
Yep, that's all you can do is just roll the dice these days because it is a minefield out there in the pitching landscape. So
if you just don't get blown up, I'm pumped.
Like a low fours ERA might finish mid of the pack for you in Roto, and that might be just enough. It's that crazy right now.
Yeah.
But one last thing here, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim also have put closer Cody Allen, or former closer Cody Allen, on the 10-day IL with a lumbar spine strain. That doesn't sound good. But the more important question I have for you, because he was kind of getting pushed out anyways, who are you looking at in the back end there? Is it Ty Buttrey? Is it Hansel Robles? What are you doing here? Because it's been a little bit all over the board off and on.
Yeah, if I were going to make a bet on which one of those dudes has more saves, it would be Hansel. And I think we saw it a little bit this weekend. I think it was either yesterday or Saturday that they had a lead going into the eighth, and they brought in Butchery in the eighth. And then Butchery gave up a run, and then they scored a couple. So it was a non-save situation, but then they had Robles come in for the ninth. And I have no doubt that they think that Butchery is a better pitcher, and he is, but I think they're using him more as the fireman. You know, the day after Allen got hurt, Butchery pitched like two plus innings in relief because he was like putting out fires. And I think they're going to use him as the fireman and Robles as the finisher. So I think the people that fabbed Robles this last week got a pretty good deal on him. And I think he ends up with more saves.
Awesome. Awesome. Last thoughts here on the news section that says that to be analysis or whatever. It could be a fan analysis. I don't care. But I know how much we love the youngsters. And Vladito made his debut last Friday. And so did Carter Kieboom. Just any takeaways from the early week, and it's three games in. But any thoughts on these two guys? Is obviously we're pumped to see him. But what's your thoughts?
So my thought, I'll start out with Kieboom. Obviously, I think he's hit two home runs since he came up, and that's a pretty good thing for him because I think he's one of those guys that could go either way. He's a really good prospect. I personally didn't bid a ton of money on him because his rest of season playing time really isn't assured, nor is a premium lineup spot, right? But I think if he mashes, he can get those things. I think he can move into a better lineup spot. I think he can move into full-time PT even when Trey Turner comes back, but he has to produce in the time between now and when Trey comes back. And if he doesn't, he'll go back down. They have plenty of infielders. But if he does, I think they'll just say, wow, this guy's good. We're going to keep him rest of season. So I think he's a really high variance player, and I think he's a good prospect, so he has that ability. And the two home runs, like I said, really good start for him. And then Vladito, I mean, dude, I'm just so happy. I'm just so happy he's here. As a baseball fan, it's amazing. Like, we have been waiting for this kid. He's basically as exciting as Acuna was last year. And we haven't seen prospects like this. We say that all the time, but I really believe that he's a generational type of prospect. I mean, last year, you don't need the stats to tell you that he's good, but like since last year, 61 extra base hits and 48 strikeouts. That is out of this world. Like, this guy is just, he makes my heart flutter when I think about him. And I've been going out of my way to watch every one of his at-bats. I'll, you know, DVR the games and then just watch his at-bats when I get home. I just want as much Vlad as I can get in my life. And he's here, and we've had to wait too long, but finally he's here. And I have like zero doubts that he'll just crush the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's what is fun about baseball. We talk about how we like Astudillo. He's fun about baseball. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is pure fun on the base paths. It's just on the field and the wherever. It's just amazing. And that's what's great about it. Now, you're talking about how he makes your heart flutter. Does Juan Soto know about this?
I mean, Juan knows he's my main man. Like, I will never stray from Juan Soto. part of the brand. I love Soto. I think that Soto is like just long-term, you know, he can be Bobby Abreu, who, if you don't remember, Bobby Abreu was a fantastic player for a long time. And I don't know
if you've seen Derby champion.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the Zips projection for Soto in like 2021, but it's like the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I will try to retweet it on Twitter.
Yeah, I just know every projection I've ever seen with Soto is ridiculous because he's that damn good. But, and to me, he's still kind of not gotten on a fast start yet. So I'm scared when he gets on a heater, it's going to get, like, nuclear out there. It's going to be really good.
He's got the quietest, like, 275 on base percentage and six homers and three steals that you have seen this entire year. Nobody's talking about Soto. And he's just kind of chugging along. Like, the kid's just going to be an all-time great. I have no doubt.
Yep, he's an absolute beast. Let's go to the Fab Market TGFBI Week 5 Fab Report, courtesy of Smata. Thanks again, Sue Smata. Lots of great stuff here, as usual. We'll kind of go over some players that were added by a lot of people or just to make fun of people. We'll see how it goes. But we'll start off with Brian Goodwin because he's a name that keeps popping up in conversation as he's not flashy by any means, but continually getting the job done on a mediocre at best Anaheim team. He was only owned in like 7% of Yahoo and ESPN leagues at the moment, but he went from anywhere from $10 to $51. In 15-team leagues, he is viable, in my opinion. What's your thoughts on Goodwin right now? Because he's getting the job done and playing every day.
Yeah, I would like to make fun of people, but I won't be able to do it for Goodwin. I think he's a pretty good player. I mean, if you look at his career, not a long career, right? I think he's like 4 or 5 seasons in. He has 593 career major league plate appearances. And in those plate appearances, basically a full season's worth, 261 average, 22 homers, 10 steals. And now he's kind of hitting in the heart of the Angels order. I think he hit third today. I think he was sixth yesterday. But he's been in the heart of that order. I think that's a pretty good buy. Most of the people that fabbed him in TGFBI got him under $30. You need an outfielder five or a DH? Dude, that's pretty solid. I think that was a good buy.
Yep, I was happy with my $24 win on that one. That was
in on that action. Good for you, buddy.
I had to preface it by saying I think he's very worth it as a 15-team league for a reason. I had to cover my ass before you buried
him. Right. But if I had said, "Oh, that's terrible. He's a fish. You know, anyone who bought him is an idiot," you'd have said nothing. Like, okay.
No, we're moving on to Carter Keene. No, yeah, that's exactly how it would go. But I think he's a viable play. Do I think he's going to hit .330 the rest of the year? Probably not. Let's be realistic about it. But very serviceable, and I think like 280, 290 is not out of the question because he's not a pure masher. He's just a good line drive hitter. So I think there's a lot to like there. And you talk about he's still not that old yet, so he might still be finding his groove. And there's really no one going to push him out of playing time there in Anaheim anytime soon. So don't mind that at all. Let's go to Carter Keyboom. He went in every league, and this is where it gets fun looking at this page. He went as low as $51 in League 18 to David Pepping, I believe. I might have butchered that. All the way to $421 to Michael Waterloo in League 3. The sad part for Michael Waterloo is the next closest guy was $333 cheaper. So that one stings. But there's 3 bids over 400. Waterloo, Cross, and Jake Cowart. It was steep. It was steep. I know he went for like 183 in my league.
Yeah, he was already talking about 50 in a number of others too.
Yeah, he went 350 or above in 247 leagues. So lots going on there. We already talked about it, so I don't want to bring – we don't have to talk about it anymore. But one thing you mentioned earlier is that was my biggest concern with him is playing time. To me, like they originally said when Trey Turner got hurt, they weren't going to bring him up because they wanted to bring him up when he's here for good. Then the fact they bring him up when Trey Turner's rehabbing and going to be back in like 10 to 14 days really threw me off. So I'm confused on what's going on here. I guess they just didn't want to lose any more ground in the division, and he's hitting the ball so well. But
it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Defoe is just
garbage. He's hot garbage.
Like they couldn't see that anymore.
Yeah, Defoe's good to be that utility guy that plays like once a week, where they can't do that with Keyboom because Keyboom needs every day at bats. So, yeah, I'm with you there. It's just I couldn't imagine spending $421 for 2 weeks of baseball. That's going to sting, but that's not me, and that's what we have fun with this on. Cody Bass.
Go ahead. I wouldn't have paid that much. We'll see if it ends up being worth it, but I think it's more likely that those teams end up regretting spending 400 plus.
Yeah, like I did the keep him honest like 120-ish, and they went for 183 in my league. Well, like looking at these numbers right now, so obviously there's half of them went for 250 or more. So those are half the leagues already got one team that's pretty much out of the running for Nate Lowe, unless they've saved a lot of money. Now, seeing these prices for Carter Keyboom, and you don't have to give away all your secrets, like what range do you think he's going to – like, are you thinking 250 to 300 might be happening come Monday?
Yeah, I do. I mean, because I think that people will pay about for low what they paid for – what the market set for Keyboom. And I think – I mean, that's the way I'll look at it too, is I'll look and say, okay, what were people paying for Keyboom? Okay, I probably need to pay about this much to get him. It's so the way I think about it is if I'm going to pay 250 plus for a guy, I want to know that this guy could potentially make me a league winner. Like that's the way I felt about Juan Soto last year. And he was, I don't have that feeling about Keyboom. I have more of a feeling about Lowe that way, but probably not as strong as Soto. So I don't know if I'll end up getting him, honestly, if his bids are like Keyboom's.
Yeah. 100% with you there. And what I kind of want to do is I need to reach out or or maybe he'll do something this week on his podcast, but see what the Welsh on his prospect one. Because sure. I know these guys are doing a lot of him, like James Anderson and those guys, the prospect gurus. They're doing a lot of those kind of, okay, April's done. What's the next group of prospects coming up? And in reality, we might have seen all the good ones already. So you might not have to blow your wad on anything else later on. So that'll help dictate things too. But yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Agreed.
All right. I'm going to do a quickie right here. But Chris Bassey went from $1 to $36. A couple good starts last week. Any interest in a guy like Chris Bassey?
I mean, he's a 30-year-old with a 1.34 career whip, 7.3 career strikeouts per nine. I mean, he's got a nice matchup this week at Pittsburgh, so I get it, but I would not be spending any chunk bids on him. Like, that's not the kind of player that I want to be spending $30 chunks on. Like, I might go a buck or two just to see if I'm the only one who wants him, but I think if you do too many of these throughout the year, you end up getting really short at the end, and it's not really worth it.
100% agree. Danny Santana went from $10 to $68. A, I was surprised he's still available in this many leagues. B, Rougned Odor's back. Elvis Andrus is playing every day. I really don't see what the playing time is at unless he's just super utility. Do you see him playing enough to be kind of viable for these bids? I know he's off to a good start, but playing time could be an issue.
No, I don't. In fact, I hate to just agree with you in a lot of these ways, but I do. Like, the time to get Danny Santana was when Odor got hurt, not when he came back. Like, Danny Santana is a 260 career hitter with no power, and he's currently hitting 345 through 62 at-bats. Like, he's a fish on a heater, and his playing time is now going to be sporadic from here on out. He's hit, like I said, he's hitting 345, so he probably deserves a start or two a week. I'm sure Texas is like, okay, this guy's hot. He is not going to remain that hot. Like, I think he's got a sub-300 career on-base percentage, and he's been given chances. Like, I just don't see it.
And there's a reason why he was once kind of – I'm not a top prospect for the Twins, but he was a popular youngster. That didn't work. He went to Atlanta. That didn't work. He's still rather young, and it's not working still. So just keep that in mind. This could be another quickie as well. Dexter Fowler, $1 to $26. I know he had a good week. I want nothing to do with Dexter Fowler. Am I misreading this one?
Personally, I'm all right with Fowler. The thing I don't like is that he's not showing any power anymore. That's a big issue because he's never been a big stolen base or home run guy. He's a guy that would, you know, be around 15-15 somewhere in there, depending a little more, a little less. But he's hitting over 300. He's got an on-base over 400. I think the bids that are like $25 and less, I think is reasonable. I think it's reasonable. He's hitting sixth for St. Louis, and he's kind of one of those guys a little bit like Brian Goodwin. Like, I probably like him and Goodwin about the same.
Okay, fair enough. Emilio Pagan went from 11 to 207. There's some bids here that blow my mind. Yes. Emilio Pagan, $217 for Ryan Roof, 156, 100. And you see the differences in some of these. Like, they got smoked. I get the kind of speculative bids, the lower down there, because he's getting saves. But at the same time, you have Alvarado and company. You have a loaded Tampa Bay pen where there's rotating guys around. Alvarado might have the best stuff, but he's only getting the chances when, you know, he's the guy that goes in at the most important time of the game, not necessarily save time. So what would you be doing with Emilio Pagan? Like, how would you have approached this guy? I understand the speculative nature, but my goodness, some of these bids.
So I think my bid across the board for Pagan was $15. And then when I saw him come in the seventh on Sunday before Castillo and Alvarado, I was just like, yeah, forget that. And I dropped him down to $5. And that was the max I was willing to pay. The reality is he might get a couple of saves. Tampa is a team that mixes and matches. Castillo's going to get some saves. Alvarado's going to get some. I think they trust Pagan and he'll get a couple too. But if you're playing in weekly leagues where you have to like start a guy the entire week, I just don't really see that he's going to be worth it enough to start him over a starting pitcher or another guy that's better. I think those bids, I mean, desperation is a stinky cologne, my friend, and that stinks.
Yes, that one stinks. The I'm not going to ever justify those bids, but a theory I've been hearing around the quote-unquote industry or on Twitter lately is, as bad as starting pitching is, would you rather put like a Castillo and a Pagan to fill two lineup spots on a weekly lineup, those kind of pitchers, instead of, you know, throwing a kind of a Chris Bassett or somebody out there that might not have an ideal matchup? Would you rather go with those kind of relievers that if combined might get you 2 to 3 saves, but still aren't going to get you a ton of strikeouts and stuff? Or would you still stick with starters more often than not?
No, I'd still stick with the starters. Like Castillo is a yes for me because I think he's got way more strikeout upside and I think he's got a better path to saves. But I would not want to spend two of my spots trying to get two thirds of a closing situation. Like that's just lighting money on fire to me.
Okay.
Like it's not even like they're the only two. Like Alvarado is still probably the favorite for the most saves in that pen. Like I just don't think that's good. No.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like you said, if there's two guys, it makes sense. Three, kind of pushing it.
Yeah.
Eric Stogard went from $1 to $33. He has like an 11-game hitting streak since he's been called up. We've seen him hit well before, probably not this well, but if he's getting every day at bats in Toronto and, you know, hitting in front of Vlad and Smoke and company, do you what are your thoughts on Stogard?
You know, I'm all for nerd power, so I root for Stogard. I like him, but I think the bidding that we saw, pretty optimistic. I mean, I hate to just spout a guy's career stats and be like, okay, this is what this guy, you know, is going to be because players change. But dude, Sogard's like 170 pounds and he's 33 years old and he's a 242 career hitter with fuck all for power. Like he's had a nice 41 at bat stretch, but like what else is there for Sogard? I just think he's a pumpkin and midnight is striking soon. And I get the draw because he's hitting leadoff. Like you said, he's getting full time at bats. There is value in that if you have a hole at the position. But other than that, I would not be expecting much from him. He's a guy that in 2 weeks you're going to be like, shoot, I need to get somebody who can play in this spot. So I don't think he's for real.
Would you rather have, you're talking pumpkins here, similar positions, and they both have some weird starts to the year. Would you rather have Eric Stogard or Tommy La Stella?
Oh, wow.
Because they're both rostered in almost all 15 team leagues.
That's tough. In a batting average league, I mean, I'd probably lean towards Sogard just because he continues to hit leadoff, better lineup spot. In an on base percentage league, I think it's clearly La Stella.
Yep, this is 2019, folks. This is what's happening.
This is a sad place that we found ourselves in.
Welcome to the rabbit hole. yep, we just talked about. Emilio Pagan going for some crazy bids. Somehow Hansel Robles didn't go as high. And to me, they're kind of in similar spots, even though Robles only competing with one other guy in the pen. He went from $12 to $72. I know we already talked about the Anaheim situation. Where would you have been on the spectrum of bids?
So I think where I went with Hansel, depending on the league, I was between 35 and 45. So compared to Pagan, where I was at $5, Pagan was like a backup bid for me on Hansel. We talked about him a little bit earlier, but I think he's the favorite for saves there. And I think getting him under $72, I actually think that's a nice buy because I think right now he's the favorite for saves. I think he's the favorite for the closing job. And closers are just so, so fickle. And it's one of those things where if he pitches well and closes out 4 or 5 in a row, that's his job. Like Cody Allen is not coming back and taking that. Like they're not long-term committed to Cody Allen. They don't give a shit about that guy. So I think that Robles has a good chance to take off much better than Pagan. And it's crazy to me that the bidding on him was like less than Pagan. Maybe I'm reading this wrong because we're all just speculating, but I would way rather have Hansel Robles.
Yeah, two things you said. I'd way rather have Hansel Robles. A, they gave him an Undertaker intro, which you can't really beat that.
That's a closer.
Yeah, that, if you get stuff like that, you better be closing ball games. Or good Lord, what is going on there in Anaheim? But both these guys, you said they're both speculative closers. So why blow your wad on one, but not like those bids should have been the same or all on Hansel's side, not on Pagan's, in my opinion. That's what made no sense. I wouldn't have gone high on either because speculation, but. Yeah, I think Robles has the better path to this one, but time will tell. Arizona, Jerod Dyson is actually playing really well here. Maybe it's just a hot streak. Maybe he's figuring it out. He's got speed for days, which steals are always an asset in roto leagues, and especially 15-teamers. went from anywhere from $9 to $78. Anything you're seeing in Jerod Dyson, and you know, maybe you like him more than, say, the Brian Goodwins and Dexter Fowlers of the world?
I probably do, in the sense that speed is at such a premium. And I mean, Dyson has always run. You know, he's like a poor man's Rajai Davis back in the day, where he like steals 30 bases every year, even though he never gets full-time PT. But the reality is, per 162 games in his career, he's stolen 48 bases. And now he's getting not full-time playing time, but like, I don't know, like three quarters playing time. And he's hitting leadoff a lot. Like, that's a good lineup, scoring a lot of runs. I think Dyson's a legit player. And dude, stolen bases attached to halfway decent players are not easy to find. I think he's a pretty good buy for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of that one. I think I was worth the pennies there. Let's go to Luis Rengifo. I probably butchered that, but I'll try. For the Angels, another Angel on the FAB market. Anywhere from $3 to $200. Talk about the spectrums. Chris Meany gets him for $3. And I, goddamn Chris, $3. But he goes up for $200 to our buddy Van Lee. Wow, lead the cat.
Dude, Van spent $200 on him?
Yeah, I would never have saw Van spending $200 on him. That's, wow, someone hacked his account. I think he even put $20 and hit an extra zero. But, yeah, this guy's a prospect, a pretty good one with some speed and average. But what's your thoughts on him? Because it's an Angels team where if he plays, he should get playing time. Like, if he performs, he should get playing time.
Yeah, well, I will say this. I love Van, and I also love Rengifo. I mean, I'm intrigued by the kid. I will say this, like, you talked about his speed. Last 2 years in the minors, combined 75 steals. And one of the things I like about him is that he can also take a walk. Like, I like base stealers that get on base, not just like Billy Hamilton, where they like squeak grounders through the infield. They can get on base other ways. Last season, Rengifo, 75 walks against 75 strikeouts. Like, it's not that many players that are able to have a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. I think that has value. And maybe $200 was steep, but I am intrigued by this kid. And I mean, I don't know that he'll get PT the rest of the year. All that's up in the air, but I do like his profile, and I do think it was worth adding at reasonable prices.
Yeah, this is going to be probably to many sound like a very dumb statement, but it could be a bold statement that I could see coming true, just because that's why I'm going to say it. But I think that Rengifo, or I'm going to butcher his name, I apologize, has a much better chance to stick up the rest of the year than Carter Kieboom, and his buy might be well worth the money compared to Carter Kieboom's come season's end. That's my thoughts on this one.
Whoa, that's hot, dude. And I like it. I like the profile of this guy, man.
Yeah, no, I traded for him in a Dynasty League this year because I was trying to rebuild. I inherited a team, and I was grabbing prospects that were close to the bigs, and I got Tucker and Rengifo, and I'm pumped that they're already up, so I like what I saw when I looked into him this year. So I'm surprised he's up this soon, and that made me very happy about that.
Yep. But
good stuff there. Just two more guys I want to ask you about here. First, Luke Jackson of the Atlanta Braves, kind of our third closer committee type situation. With Vizcaino going out for the year, AJ Minter is supposed to be the guy. He has not been that guy. So Luke Jackson getting some love in that Atlanta bullpen. I think he got the save tonight as well, or got the late inning role there for the Braves.
Webb got the save tonight.
Oh, God, this makes this even more fun come next Sunday. Yes. So he went from $5 to $88. Well, now that we know that Webb got the save, what's your thoughts on Luke Jackson?
I mean, if I paid $88, I think I'd want my $88 back, man.
Oh, man.
Oh, let me talk to the manager. I need a refund, mate.
Oh,
Luke Jackson doesn't really profile as a closer. Like, career 7.5 strikeouts per nine. He does throw about 95 miles an hour, and Minter's struggling, so it's possible. But I don't know. Like, if we're going to take the over-under on rest-of-season saves from Jackson at, like, 9.5, I would definitely take the under tonight. Like I said, so when Jackson got the save, Minter had gotten into a bunch of trouble, and Webb had already pitched in that game. And so they bring in Jackson, and he cleaned up the mess, and that's great. But I think those situations are like, you can't say, okay, that guy's the closer. Like, when a guy comes in with a 2-run lead and starts the ninth inning and closes it out, that's a closing situation. Not like, shit, this other guy can't get it done. Please help. Tonight, Jacob Webb got the save. He's got a career 11.2 strikeouts per nine in the minors, way more of a closer profile. He's actually a guy that I would be adding. We'll see what happens the rest of the week. But if you're in like daily moves leagues, I've already grabbed Webb in those leagues, and hopefully that ends up coming to fruition. We'll see. I mean, yeah, Minter is struggling.
I like it. A little Jacob Webb talk.
Yeah.
Late night action. I like that. Yeah. That's,
also, I didn't know who Jacob Webb was before. Like,
I was just about to say, I have no idea who he is. I'm about to look him up after.
Yeah.
Yep. Fun times. And if two guys like myself and Sammy who do pay attention to a lot of baseball don't know who the guy is, yeah, that's just pretty much everything you need to know. Last guy I'll ask about here is Raimel Tapia. Went from $5 to $131. 131 was Nathan Grimm, League 3. He's had a really good week last week. David Dahl's back. You have Blackman. Is there enough playing time for Raimel Tapia in that outfield? Because we've always wanted him to have the playing time. Is there enough playing time to be worth bids like this?
I don't think so. I mean, Colorado is just like world famous for blocking good young players. And there's no reason to think that they won't do it with Tapia. Desmond's got that massive contract. He sucks, but he's going to get at least half the playing time, if not more. There's just not a lot of room for Tapia, and it sucks. And maybe he breaks through and things change. But like right now, I don't think it's worth that bid, because you need to be bidding on guys who are getting at bats for that kind of money.
Yeah, that's why it stood out to me. Like I said before, people have listened weekly. It's not just about the flashy names. It's kind of more of a let people know what not to do thing, possibly. And every team dictates things differently based on injuries, but some of these stand out pretty well that, you know, instead of Raimel Tapia, go get Jerod Dyson or Dexter Fowler or Brian Goodwin. That's got playing time. Stuff along those lines. All right. This will wrap up the fantasy baseball portion of the podcast. For those that have not seen Game of Thrones, Season 8, Episode 3, Battle of Winterfell, come back and finish it later. Otherwise, Sammy and I are going to chit-chat for a little bit here. First off, Sammy, did it meet your expectations?
So that's a really loaded question. And so I'm going to start off.
This is how we unravel the ball of yarn.
Right. So I actually watched it for the second time today because my wife was having like such fierce anxiety yesterday that she couldn't watch it. And so I watched it with friends, and then I watched it again with her today. And so I've seen it twice. And I will say that I try not to have any expectations. And I think that's where a lot of people end up ruining their own experience. Like, I do a lot of analysis in everything I do, right? Baseball, fantasy baseball, and poker, and my job, it's all analysis. And to me, Game of Thrones is like, dude, just sit back and watch it and enjoy it. Like, so much of our experience is dictated from what we thought the experience would be or should be. And, you know, it's like you go see a movie, everyone tells you it's great and it's only okay. And you're like, ah, that sucked. But if everyone told you it was bad and it's only okay, you're like, oh, that was actually pretty good. Your expectation shaped the way you experience it. And for me, I really do my best to just like say, I'm going to watch this and I'm going to enjoy it. And I'm not going to put any value on what I think it should be. So that's my like existential view of Game of Thrones.
I think it's a great answer, though, because, you know, this won't be Game of Thrones takes, but my wife and I went and saw the Avengers Endgame. We've seen all the movies, just kind of turn your brain off, have fun type stuff. And I thought it was really enjoyable. And then she's critiquing the whole thing. And I basically told her the same thing you just said. I said, why don't you just enjoy the movie for what it is? Like, it was just pure entertainment. Now, Game of Thrones was just like that. Like you're saying, anywhere you looked on Twitter last night or this morning, it was people either really, really happy with it or critiquing every aspect of it all, like as much as, it was too dark, or why did they send their best warriors with flames into the middle of nowhere and get killed in 2 seconds?
Right. There was admittedly was a real questionable decision.
Well, to be fair, Jon Snow has proven that he's not the best leader in battles. Like he says, does not have good game plans at all.
Correct.
But that was poor. And because then you get to turn the Dothraki back on you now, and that's not good. But there were a lot of factors to this. Like, I could go in many different directions. First off, like, do you think Danny's really capable of you know, running a dragon, because she seems to leave their dragons in like such danger all the time, literally just sitting there on the ground with like dead people climbing all over him.
Yeah, that was a really, really peculiar move by her to ground the dragon and then sit around and just like kind of take a, you know, take in the view while the dead are like encroaching quickly. Like, dude, you already lost one dragon. Let's not blow it again. You know, you don't want to blow the 3-0 dragon lead, right?
Yes, right.
And frankly, it was pretty hard to tell who was in charge of this entire plan.
True.
For the North. Like, there didn't seem to be one centralized leader that was taking care of everything. It's like, okay, John and Danny are going to be off to the side riding dragons. Everyone at the castle, you know, we kind of have this plan. And then we had the Dothraki just Leroy Jenkins it. I mean, it was a strange game plan by them, but fortunately it worked out in the end because Arya is just like a straight boss.
She is. I always say this with the most respect possible. My wife now understands it's not a derogatory thing when I say it. Arya is one of the baddest bitches on the planet.
She's a bad bitch.
You know, like I've grown to love her through her whole metamorphosis into what she is now. And just like when she left the many faced gods and, you know, came on her mission, killed the Freys and then did all this, like you keep seeing this growth in her. And, you know, at the end of season 7, when Bran tells the Hound that she's alive and he basically says, she says like, oh, it's okay, I'm taking care of her now or something like that. And it's, oh, no, you don't have to worry about her. Like, she could take care of herself type deal. Yeah. She's bad, like really, really bad. And when she tells Sansa, gives her the little sword and goes, she says, I don't even know how to use it. Hit her with the pointy end. That was amazing. Flashback to Jon Snow. But there was just so many parts of that, like her scenes going through the castle, the library. I have become a humongous Arya fan. And I'm not saying I saw it happening the way it was going to happen. I don't think many people saw it happening the way she did, like full Michael Jordan through the air type thing. Rotowear, by the way, gold with that shirt.
Oh my God, that shirt is incredible. So good.
Like, and he does that within like 30 seconds of a show finishing. But it was amazing, and I'm glad she's the one that did it. Are you okay with the way it ended?
I am. And the reason I'm okay with it, so a big part of the criticism, there were a couple of bigger criticisms, right? And one of them was that, especially by fans of the books, I haven't read the books, admittedly, so take that for what it's worth. But
neither have I.
Yeah, I'm busy. I got a life. Sorry.
those are big ass books. Have you seen those things?
Yeah, it's a lot of words, man. That's a lot of words.
I read Baseball HQ. I can't get to that.
Right, an athletic article is about as far as I know.
Exactly.
But you know, one of the big things criticisms was the Game of Thrones doesn't handle, especially since Martin's role ended and they've gone off on their own, that they haven't handled the paranormal very well. It's like something they kind of want to brush under the rug and get past. And maybe that's true, but I think I'm happy the way this happened, because I think that at its core, Game of Thrones is about house versus house. It is a medieval political drama. And I think the way that the show should end is the North and the Starks versus Cersei Lannister, who is, I mean, frankly, maybe the best character on the show. She has such depth to her. We have an emotional attachment to her. We don't have emotional attachment to the Night King or the White Walkers. Like, that is not the final boss. The final boss is us. It's Cersei Lannister. That's what made this show great, and that's how I think it should end. And I'm happy that that's the direction they ended up going in.
You like most of your articles, you write. You said that perfectly. That's kind of how I came to look at it. It's like, yeah, the Night King was cool. Yes, he was a cool villain. Yes, I'd like to know kind of maybe who he really was. Or you know,
also, like one for three on the spear tossing. 333 average. Yeah, that's so great. But you know, in like, fighting for supremacy of the world, you got to do better than that.
See, all you Danny Santana bitters, regression happens. Look at the Night King. Like, it's coming. But, like in the last one, that was a really weak throw. I don't know what that was all about. But when she tries to burn him alive and he has that smirk on his face, I'm thinking, okay, is he a Targaryen? Is he, maybe he's Jon's dad? Like, what, or is he the Mad King? Or so many theories here, and we never get to find that out. That kind of stinks a little bit. At the same time, it's not the end of the world. Like, I can see that's not the end of the world. And Brand maybe still brings that to life later on. We don't know. But it will be interesting. We could talk about a ton of different angles. We don't need to be here all night for this. It's more just kind of a fun synopsis of our thoughts from the episode. You know, the Hound kind of showing, I don't know if coward's the right word. It was more just like he knows this is pointless, so he's going to hide as long as possible. It's kind of
He had a nihilist Arby's moment for a second there.
Yeah, he's like, screw this, I'm out.
But screw this, I'm going to go find an Arby's, you cunts.
Exactly, you cunts. But then he goes and, you know, he still shows that he's a human being. And he loves Arya and wants to protect Arya, so that was pretty cool. But there's angles to go.
But what's your opinion? So one of the other big criticisms was that people were expecting a lot of the main characters to die. They're like, okay, this is going to happen. And pretty much none of them did. Like, we saw deaths from, like, Jorah, et cetera.
Is Jorah officially dead, though?
Yeah, we don't know, but I think so. I think so. But
He should be.
Yeah, he had a great run, you know, and beyond. But, you know, the main characters all survived. What do you think about that in terms of did it disappoint you? Do you think it was a good thing? Like, what's kind of your overall feeling about the death toll in this episode?
Well, yeah, okay. At first I wanted the death toll to happen. Like, I'm thinking, okay, episode two was cool and all. People got their moments, like Brienne and stuff. And usually when that happens in Game of Thrones, it's time for you to go. Like, Gendry, he got what he wanted from Arya. Now it's time to go. This is what you think usually happens. What I was wondering is how many will die. Obviously not enough, but Jorah goes. One of the guys from the Wall, I always forget his name. He goes when he's trying to save Samwell.
Theon.
And then,
Theon died. Yeah,
and the Theon, thank God, I was good for him to go.
Yeah.
Good and death. Then little Mormont died, but she died in a bad way, which was
awesome. like a boss as well.
Like a boss. But those were like the main four, and I know there's all the critiques of every time you'd see Samwell or Brienne or Jaime just being swarmed by these guys, they'd survive. But I'm okay with it because it kind of goes back to what you said about I want Stark versus Lannister. I want Jaime to have a chance to kill Cersei or be a part of that some way, somehow. I want to see that all take place. And with all the carnage that took place at Winterfell, and you got Cersei with all that extra army up there, we need all those people to stay alive to go up there to at least make it interesting. So I'm okay with it for now because I have confidence that I'd be very shocked if in the end all of them are still alive. Like, there's a good chunk that are still going to disappear, I have a feeling.
Of course. And I agree with you that, dude, it's really hard, that trope where, like, yeah, they're fully surrounded. How are they going to get out of this? And they do. Like, that's reserved for, like, cheesy movies. It's like if they had guns, you know, multiple characters would have definitely survived because the villain like ran out of ammo at just the wrong moment. Like, it's a tough thing to pull off. It's a little cheese ball, but I agree at the same time. Like, how do you give a character a proper death? How are you going to give Brienne of Tarth a proper death in this battle? Just getting swarmed by, you know, the dead and killed. Like, that's not what we deserve. That's not the closure, right? We want some gangster deaths. We want like some heroic deaths. We want some emotional deaths, honestly. Like, that's why we watch Game of Thrones, and I just don't think you're gonna get that in like a crazy sword battle with the dead. And so, you know,
because like, we're gonna get the Hound has to face the Mountain. Like, we couldn't have him die last night. You have to see that. Now, if he dies in that battle, sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, Bran's supposed to be coming for Tyrion and Jaime, and I don't see him killing either one of them because A, he loves them too much. Like, it's two of like the only people he cares about. Right. And B, Tyrion always said, I'll pay you more than anybody else. So that one's in the books. but it's just like there's so many ways, like you said, they could die. Like, maybe Brienne dies when she protects Jaime in King's Landing because she loves Jaime. Like, there's so many angles to this that those would be way more emotional than just being swarmed by a bunch of zombies, basically.
Yeah, it just, you know, I think that the show is going to end how it was. And the reality is, so many people said, you know, that Game of Thrones has gotten soft because they just would kill off characters. And it's like, yeah, they would, but mostly what that represented is they did things that we didn't expect, right? When Ned got beheaded in season one, that was so crazy because we didn't see that coming at all. The entire time, we were like, how's Ned going to get out of this? and then he didn't, and you're like, wait, what?
Exactly.
It was unexpected. The fact that so many main characters survived in this episode, that was unexpected, right? True. So in a way, they stayed true to that.
Yeah, no, that's very true. So it will be interesting to see how it goes. I'm kind of like certain people I need to see die. I need why is he going to skip my mind now? That stupid idiot that's trying to is banging Cersei. He needs to go. His name's slipping my mind all of a sudden.
Euron.
Euron, yes, Euron's got.
Yeah, I don't know anybody's name, so I'm really happy that I found that.
Yeah, Euron's got to go. There's a handful that need to go. They don't all have to go, but we'll kind of wrap it up on this because I could talk all night with you on this topic. But how do you see it ending? When episode 6 is said and done, how do you see it ending?
So I'm going to give you the cop-out answer, man. I'm sorry to do this to you, but I have really done my best to try to not think about it, to try to not decide how I think it should end or want it to end. I just want to hang back and experience it and keep my expectations out of it. So I really apologize. I know that's the worst answer, but it's the truth.
That's fair.
Yeah, but give me your take. I'm really excited to hear what you think is going to happen.
I think I'm starting to buy into the theory that they tear down the throne, so it's not one throne, and there's going to be like it'll be more like a democracy, like because we've seen all the conversations like Sansa's talked to Dany about who runs the North. I see there being kind of a not one ruler ruling everyone, and. Because that's kind of been a thing for a long time. Dany wants the throne, but she also wants kind of peace and freedom for everyone as well.
Yeah.
So I think there's a way to go about it. And you have guys like Tyrion and those guys that can kind of be the peacekeepers in the middle to make it all go smoothly. But we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Westeros could end up going to the Electoral College in the future. Like, that's...
There you go. And Samuel Tarly could lead to be the Speaker of the House. Like, you never know. It's going to be crazy. He looks like Newt Gingrich at times, so it's possible.
Yeah. Age him 45 years, and you've got a dead
ringer. Exactly. But all right, my friend, we'll wrap it up with that. This was a pleasure, as always. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find you and what you got going on?
Yeah, man. Just catch me on Roto Grinders, the On Deck premium podcast. Look out for the Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast I do with Doug Thorburn. We're going to be restarting that hopefully in the near future. And on Twitter, at Sammy Reed FI. And Bubba, I love your show. I really appreciate you having me on. And this was a ton of fun. Anytime you want to have me back on, just hit me up.
We'll do, my friend. We'll chat it up, talk some more Padres when they hit the playoffs this year and all that good stuff. But the Giants just took a 3-2 lead because Elvin Longoria hit a bases clearing double. So I need to run. So thank you, my friend. This has been a hell of an evening and a great, great chat.
Take care.
Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 166 with Sammy Reed, Fantasy Baseball, Week 5, Fab, and Game of Thrones. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.